We're both so close.
You caught a cold last time from this coat. Can we turn it off? This?
Whatever you like. I don't notice it. I think I have allergies. I don't know. All right, so Rabbo said we're on Daf Tzadi Tes Amid Aleph. Okay. And let's just review what we know so that we can jump into this. We wanted to suggest that whether Uman Kona Vishvach Kli or not is a Machlokas Tanoim in the case of a Braisa Aseli Shirim Nizomim Vitabos, where she says to an Uman, she hires him to create for her various kinds of jewelry. He says Shirim here in the bottom, he says is Somid Shal Regel, which I guess is an anklet. And Vakadesh Ani Lecha, and I'm willing to marry you for your pu'ula, for your action in creating this piece of jewelry. And Rabbi Meir says that once the process of creating the jewelry is complete, she's Mekudeshes, he validates the Kedusha. That's Rabbi Meir. The Chachom say Eina Mekudeshes, because he has to give us something other than the tachshit, something other than the jewelry that he was working on, another object he has to give for Kedushin, otherwise the Kedushin is not valid. And the Gemara thinks that Rabbi Meir is based on the principle of Uman Kona Vishvach Kli, and therefore when the Uman gives back this Kli to the woman who commissioned him, and he gives it to her for the sake of Kedushin, he's actually giving us something new that he owns that she doesn't own, namely the Shvach. And this would support the Shita that Uman Kona Vishvach Kli. The bad news is that the Chachom disagree, and they say that's not valid Kedushin, which seems to imply Ein Uman Kona Vishvach Kli. But at this point, the Gemara wants to suggest that the Machlokes is not the question of Uman Kona Vishvach Kli, and the Gemara wants to offer another possibility, a different approach. They're not arguing at all about the din of Uman Kona Vishvach Kli. In fact, it could be that everybody agrees that Ein Uman Kona Vishvach Kli. That's also possible. But what are they arguing about? So the Gemara wants to suggest that maybe what they're arguing about is that even though Ein Uman Kona Vishvach Kli, but rather arguing about a different issue, and this is where we finished up last week, of schirus. When and how is the obligation to pay for schirus, to pay the uman, when does it evolve? When is it, and how is it generated? So just to make sure we're all on the same page, let's just see where we can find it. It's on the bottom of the Amud, and the Gemara is about 10 lines up from the top, and it says, one second, no, it's less than 10 lines, it starts 10 lines up from the top. What's count? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 lines up from the bottom, and the Gemara says, no, Ein Uman Kona Vishvach Kli, right? Kuliyama Ein Uman Kona Vishvach Kli. Does everybody have the place? Okay. Elohacha b'yeshna l'schirus mitchil v'ad sof kamiflagi. Rabbi Meir Savar ein l'schirus el basof. Rabbanan Savri yesh l'schirus mitchil v'ad sof. So let's just first start slowly on a very superficial level. The machlokas here is at what point is the chiyuv to pay for the schirus engendered. And there are two possibilities. Yeshna l'schirus mitchil ad sof means that with every, it's something that incurs gradually. Right? In other words, with every additional pu'ula, there's a chiyuv to pay. Right? So it's, I guess you could call it incremental, if I can use that word. Every additional pu'ula, every time he takes the hammer and he knocks it in, there's a chiyuv for that extra pu'ula. mitchil vad sof. Again, this doesn't mean that the uman is going to collect his payment, his wages, every 5 minutes. You know, he's going to call her up and say, bring over another penny. You know, that's not what we're saying. But what we are saying is that she, in this case, commissioning the uman, has a chiyuv to pay for every single pu'ula. Now, once we assume yeshna l'schirus mitchila v'yad sof, and she has a chiyuv to pay for every single pu'ula, that creates what's called a chov. The other shita, the other way of defining it is ein l'schirus el basof. That it's not the pu'ula that engenders the chiyuv and the obligation to pay, but rather the final product. When the product is complete, then the chiyuv emerges. Now, why? This is the main question that we want to face today. Why does the issue of kiddushin, in a case where she accepts and he's willing to give her the schirus and not charge her for the schirus, whether or not that could be valid for kiddushin depends upon yeshna l'schirus mitchil vad sof, ein l'schirus mitchil vad sof. Let me try to explain the question. I mean to say, we have a principle called amakadish b'milva ein amakudeshes. That means if a man says, you owe me money and I will waive that obligation to pay in light of kiddushin, that's not valid kiddushin. Which means that he has to give her something. In the case of milva, he's not giving her anything. She already has the milva. He's just removing. He's removing something. He's removing his claim to the milva. Memela, she owns it. But in kiddushin, we need kiddushe kesef requires a nesina in which he gives us something. Not to remove his claim on something or his rights to get something. And that's why Makadish Mimilva Ainam Akudeshis. Now, if that be the case, then the simple understanding is Yeshno Lishkirs Mitchila Vatsov. Because basically what he's saying is that I'm not going to collect from you the wages that you owe me. Why are these monies owed? Why is that already an outstanding loan? Because yeshna l'schirus mitchila vad sof. So even at the beginning of this process, she already owes him a chov. When does he collect the chov? That's irrelevant. But the chov already exists. So when he says to her, you know what? Don't pay me my wages, and instead be miskaddish to me. That's already kiddushe milva, because he's basically waiving his rights to collect the chol. And that's mekadesh b'milva. He's not giving her anything new. Again, if uman kona b'shvach kli, that's wonderful. Then you say he's giving her something new. But here he's being mekadesh with the schirus, not with the shvach, right, in the cheft itself, but with the schirus, meaning the payment that she owes him. So that's called mekadesh b'milva. But what I don't understand is, how does the situation improve if I hold ein l'schirus el b'sof? It's just a question of when that chov emerges. Instead of emerging piecemeal in increments from the beginning of the pu'ula until the end of the pu'ula, it emerges in one fell swoop when the job is complete. But at that moment, all he has in her possession, so to speak, is a chov. She owes him money. And now he's saying, Tare at mekudeshes li, when I give you this beautiful anklet, and basically what he's doing is he's being mochel a chov. Again, what difference to make when the chov emerges? So what I have so far is a Pnei Yoshua, and the Pnei Yoshua is very short-winded, very terse. It's not here, but it's in Masech the Kiddushin. I got it here. I have the original, but I also have a summary of it here in the Masifta. And if you want, I photocopied it for you. If anybody wants to see it inside, that's, you know, it's up to you. If you like it, you don't have to take it. But he summarizes this Pnei Yoshua in footnote number Lamed. Okay, then, so you'll find footnote number Lamed on the bottom right column, going on to the top left column. And he writes that the reason why we're going to make a chiluk, you know, some distinction within the context of Mekadesh B'Milva with regard to his waving the Dmei Aschirus between Yesh L'Aschirus Mitchil Atzof or Ein L'Aschirus El Basof. He says that Adam Mekadesh Isha B'Milva Sheyesh Lo Aleha Ein Kavanos L'Aschirus Banos Mechilus Mil. First of all, he clears the path from another question. The Gemara says in Masechta Kiddushin that if a man waves a chov and he says to a woman, I will marry you with the hana, with the benefit that you have by me being mochel the chov, then she is mekudeshes. Because that's not worse than rekod lefanai, schok lefanai. Meaning, if a man gives a woman a hana, he can be mekasher with that hana, if that hana is a shom pruta. But here in this case, he's not being mekasher with the hana of mechilas milva, but rather with the milva itself. In other words, the dmei schiris that she owes him is the kesef kiddushin. And if he says, well, you don't have to pay me the dmei schiris, but I will give that to you as in lieu of kiddushin, that's mekadesh b'milva. She's not getting anything new. Instead of having to write a check and take money out of a bank account to pay him for the schiris, he's saying, I waive it. That's called mekadesh b'milva. Had he gone a step further and said to her, you know what? You owe me a chov for in lieu of my schiris, I will be mochel this chov, and with the benefit and the pleasure and the enjoyment you get from my being mochel the chov, that's called hanos mechilas milva, I want to be mekadesh you, that would have been fine. But that's not what he said. What he said was, I want to be mekadesh you with the dmei schiris themselves, and that's alva. So that's point number one, and so far, so good. I'm okay with the Pnei Yoshua. But then he writes, after defining the Kesef Kedushin as the Dmei Halva themselves, Halva meaning the Schirus, now she already has those Damim, right, because she hasn't paid him yet, it's only a Chov, an outstanding debt, he's not giving her anything, and we understand very well that's called Mekadesh B'Milva, where he's not taking anything out of his pocket and giving us something that she didn't have, he's only waving something, it's like Mavriach Ari, if you remember that sugya, is Eina Mekudeshes. However, Omnami writes Kishimakacha Bimachilas Scharpu Loso, as I Lidas Hasorim Shain Liskirus El Basov, if he's being mochel, the money's the wages that she owes him. And I'm of the opinion that Ain Liskirus El Basov is Aina Haisha Mischayevis Bitashlum Ela Im Kabolas Hatachshitim. So let me try to explain that line the way I understand it. According to the Pnei Yoshua, the chov that she owes him is clinched by what we call mesiras hatakshit in this case. What does that mean? We hold aimless chiris el basof. What triggers off the chov that she has to pay him the tashlumin? If not for the Pnei Yoshua, I would have said that when he finishes the job, that moment, the chov emerges. That's what I would have said before the Pnei Yoshua. The Pnei Yoshua is sworn against that, you know, because if that be the case, there's no way that he can be Mekadisha, because again, there's an interval of time between the Siyum HaPa'ula, when he finishes the job, and when he actually delivers the Takshit. Whether it's 5 minutes, whether it's an hour, whether it's a day or week, it doesn't matter. But in that interval of time, she's already obligated to pay him for his wages. And if that be the case, that the Schirus and the Dmei Aschirus has to be paid with the Siyum HaPa'ula, then again you come back to Mekadesh B'Milva. Says the Pnei Yoshua, no. It's not when he completes the job that she owes him the money, but there's going to be a barter exchange. Like, for example, in a classical case of a milva, what triggers off, what engenders the chov? It's the giving over the money. Meaning, a chov doesn't emerge ex nihilo, you know, poof. I owe you a chov. No. A chov has to be engendered. Just like every kinyan needs a maisa kinyan, a chov also needs a maisa kinyan. What's the maisa kinyan of a chov? When I give you money. So that's a kesef which you receive, and that engenders a chov. But in the case of schirus, what engenders that chov? So if not for the Pnei Yeshua, I would have said that what engenders the chov is the schirus itself, meaning the pu'ula, whether it's increment or at the end of the pu'ula, whatever it is, but it's the pu'ula. And therefore the chov is created by the pu'ula. But the Pnei Yeshua says that can't be, because otherwise the Kedusha wouldn't be valid, it would be Mechilas Milva. So what creates the Chov? Says the Pnei Yeshua, instead of giving her money, what does he give her in return? Instead? He gives her the Tachshit, the complete object that he worked on. Oh, says the Pnei Yeshua, now I begin to understand why the Kedusha is valid. Because it's like a case of a man who gives a woman money, and that kesef is a new gift that he's giving her. And even though the chov here is separate from the takshitim, it would be nice to do a cover-up job here and say that he's giving her the takshitim, and that's a new gift. That's only true if you hold Uman Kodim B'Shvach Kli. That takshit belongs to her, because everybody agrees now that ain't Uman Kodim B'Shvach Kli. But what we gain here, says the Pnei Yeshua, is simultaneity. Let's read it inside. He says, "Ein ha'isha mischayevus b'tashlum ela im kabbalas ha'tachshitim." At one moment does that chov to pay the schar pi'ilus emerge? At the very same moment that she receives the tachshitim, the giving, the transfer of the tachshitim to her is a maisa kinyan that engenders a chov. What does that do for me? Nimtza ki ilu malva la'ata, meaning the chov emerges now at the moment that he's giving on the tachshit. And what does he do at that very moment? He's mochel the chov. Oh, says the Pnei Yeshua, the problem with Mekadesh B'Milva, why Mekadesh B'Milva is possible, is because of the time differential between the moment of the chov and the moment that he's being Makadisha and being Mocha L'Chov. There's time T1 when the Chov emerges, and then afterwards he wants to be Mocha L'Chov. But if Lui Yitzur, he could be Mocha L'Chov straight away, immediately, simultaneously with the creation of the Chov, when you have a Hishavus HaChov and a Mechilas HaChov Bivasachas, that's valid Kedusha. Again, I'm just reading the words now. We'll try to understand them. He says, Nimtza ki'ilu malvela ata. Now, when he gives the tachshitim, he's giving her a milva, meaning she owes him a chov. Es hamos, meaning the mos of the tashlum for the schirus. Umochela lehem, and he also waives that rights to the chov. Bivasachas. That's called kesef kedushin. And therefore, you can be mekadesh even through milva. So let's just summarize. If he gave her a milva and now he wants to be mochel the milva, that's mekadesh b'milva, and that's not valid. Unless he's mekadesh with anos, mechilas milva. But if on the other hand he creates a chov together with the mechila and the chov are simultaneous, for vasachas, that's tantamount to giving her something new. Again, he's not giving her the takshit. That's not the kesef kedusha, because if the tachshit were the kesef kedusha, like Uma and Kodesh Shachli, I have no problems and no qualms about it. And that would be true in any event. Even if I held Yesh L'Schirus Mitchila V'Adsof, if Uma and Kodesh Shachli, then he's giving out the tachshit, that's a brand new gift, that's kesef kedusha. But the problem is that ain't Uma and Kodesh Shachli. So the tachshit therefore cannot function as what? It cannot serve as the kesef kedushin. The only thing that's possible to serve as the kesef kedushin is a chov. But what does it mean? He's not giving her a chov. He's being mochel a chov. And mechilas chov is not kesef kedushin. That's called mekadesh b'milva einu mekudeshes. Says the Pnei Yeshua, you could be you could be mekadesh with a chov, but only if that chov is something new that you're giving to her. How are you giving her a chov? And you're saying to her, this money is yours, by creating a mechila together with the emergence of the chov. It's a very abstract idea, Rabbi. I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm not saying it's simple, but I just want to this is the only thing I have right now, is the Bnei Yeshua, so I don't have anything better than that. Again, just to summarize, the bottom line of the Bnei Yeshua is that if you can create a chov and be mochel a chov at the very same second, then in essence, the halacha views it as if you're giving something. And that makes sense only if I hold yeshna l'schirus, I'm sorry, ein l'schirus el l'basof, because if ein l'schirus l'basof, what's the moment that triggers off that chov? What's the maisa kinyan that engenders the chov? It's the mesiras atachshitim. Oh, at that very moment, he says, "Arei mekudeshesli." With that chov that he's being mochel, he's basically giving us something that she didn't have. Why? Because he's saying to her that this money which you owe me is yours, and the money that you owe me is right here in front of my eyes. It's not something that you owe me from your mekedim from the past. It's something that you owe me now. Well, at that same now, I'm giving you back that money. And that simultaneity, that vasachas, engenders kesef kiddush. However, Abosai, I believe that this understanding of the Pnei Yoshua is predicated on the Ritva, and it's against the Rashba. And where do I get this from? Take a look at footnote number Chaf Tes, which is on the right side of your page in the middle. And first, he begins with Rashi and the Ritva. Rashi and the Ritva, I think, are the shoulders upon which this Pnei Yeshua is standing. Because if you take a look at Rashi, it's the last Rashi on Sadi Tesam and Aleph. Rashi says on Ein L'Schius El Basov, Ki Mahadil Lahu Niyala, which literally means when he, the Uman, returns it to her. What do you mean? What is he returning to her? Say it again?
The ring.
The ring, correct. The tabas, the tachshit. In other words, Rashi, and we'll soon see that the Ritva embellishes this, is of the opinion that the Kiddushin can only emerge, it can only be clinched at the moment that he gives her back this tachshit. So she gave him a tachshit, he improves it, he fixes it, he beautifies it, now he gives it back. At that moment he's Makadisha. The moment that, of the Kiddushin is the moment that he gives her the tabas. And that's exactly what we saw in the Pnei Yoshua, because the Pnei Yoshua must assume so in order to create this Bavasachas, that the Chov and the Mechila emerge simultaneously, because the Chov is only engendered when he gives her the Tabas. And he quotes the Ritva, who says, She'im nomar shachiv tashim chal miyadim siyum ha-melocha. The Ritva says, if you argue from the devil's advocate position, that this chov already emerged at the moment that he completed his job, and that's what it means. Is that af kodem shebeish v'atachshit shusa? Even before he's given her the tachshit, the chov has already emerged. Immediately when he completes the pula, nizkaf oleh tachshit b'milta. She's already obligated to pay him for the schiris, for the pula, once the job was finished. The nimtza, shebashas achzoras hatachshit, when he gives her the tachshit and he's mekadisher, he's being mekadisher with a milva. He's just wiping off an old milva that predated the mesiras hatabas. Ubehechrich, and therefore we have no choice but by process of elimination to assume that ein chiyuv tashlum chal, when does the obligation, the chov, emerge for her to pay, is b'shasha nosnim la, when he delivers the goods to her. U'miachar shemiyad nosnim l'shem kiddushin einu nidon b'kimekadish b'milva. Again, the Ritva doesn't add this line. I looked in the Ritva, he doesn't say it. This line is basically the Pnei Yoshua's line. Now that the Ritva is established that the Chiyuv Tashlum only emerges with the Mesiras HaTavas, now we can say that since at that moment he's being mochel that Chov, the very moment that the Chov emerged, that's called a giving of something new. That's called Kesef Kiddush.
So Rashi adds the words Lav Milva. He says it's not even a Milva. He thinks it's something else.
Correct. It can't be a Milva because Rashi is committed to the position that Milva is Einu Mekudesh.
Right. But Pnei Yoshua is saying that it's that the Milva and the Mechila happen at the same time.
Time?
But it is a Mechila.
Well, yes and no. I tell you this, Mitch. What the Pnei Yoshua is trying to argue is that why isn't this Milva? Why is this considered Kesef? How does this qualify as giving us something that she didn't have? And the answer is because since the milva emerges now, in other words, milva meaning chov, and he's immediately being mochla together with the emergence of the chov, that's considered that he gave us something new. which is something that you have to rack your brains on.
But it's still a milveh. Actually.
Correct, it's a milveh that can be converted through the mechila into kesef.
Right, but Rashi says it's not. Not a lot of milk.
That's what the Ritva is learning in this Rashi. He's saying, Ki mahadala niela hilkachlav milvi, that when you return this chov by being mochel a chov at the time of the Mesiras Atakshin, it's not called a milvi. Why? Because the milvi emerges together with the mechil. However, this is all against the Rashba. Because the Rashba really identifies with what I thought from the get-go is the intuitive understanding of Ein L'Schiras Ela B'Sof. And the Rashba says, we didn't find the Rashba, did we?
No.
Alright, so we'll have to rely on a secondary source, which I apologize. And he says the following, Yesh lo chiyach mikan sheladas Rabbi Meir cholu akidusha miyadim siyum hamalacha. At what point is she Mekudeshes? At the very split second that he completes the job. You know, they made an agreement from the get-go. She gave him the takshit that when he completes the job, and at that moment he's mochel lechov, that she has to pay for the wages. And that's called kedusha. When does that chov emerge? And when does the kedusha chal? At the siyum amalacha. Ach kodem shemasar losa takshit. It's very odd. I would ask the following question according to the Rash. Again, this is just a logistical question, but it bothers me a lot. Kiddushin required two Eidim. That's called Eidus L'Kiyum, I thought. How are you going to create two Eidim when, according to the Rashba, the Kiddushin is Chal when he completes the job? Meaning, if she has a relationship with another man in that interval of time, Chas V'Shom, right, between the Siyum HaPa'ula and the Mesiras HaTakshit, she's going to be put to death for the crime, and the Baal as well, for the crime of Eishes Ish. The kedusha will chal with the siyum hamalacha. I don't know. Are the edim in his shop? You know, in his artisan shop when he completes the last makush. Af kodesh emasar meachashe im lo ay kedusha chal mat shas mesira. If you're going to tell me that the kedusha is only chal when he gives her over the takshit, that would be mechilas milva. That's mekadesh milva. Hayezedin mekadesh milva. Why? Even though I hold aimless to yourself myself, when did that chov emerge, according to the sheet of the Rashba, with the siyum ha-pa'ula? No, there's already a chov. Now he gives the tachshit and he says, you don't have to pay me for it. It's gratis. Why? Because I want kedusha for that. That's exactly what mekadesh b'milveh is all about. The only way we can circumvent mekadesh b'milveh is if we assume that at the moment that the chov emerges, the kedusha is going to be chal. Otherwise, if it's an old chov, and again, old could be 5 minutes old, it doesn't matter how old, then it's mekadesh b'milveh. Therefore, the Rashba comes to the, pardon the expression, the ludicrous conclusion. Now, obviously, it's not ludicrous. I'm just saying it's a mind-boggling conclusion that at one point, at what moment in time did she become an Eishes Ish? When is the kedusha chal? When he finishes the pula. Well, that's pretty wild. You're going to have to say that somehow the Eidim testified on the Amiras Kedushin. I don't know how this works, Rav. So you really have to be a Bucky Otzim and Hilchas Kedushin in order to figure this out. There's a two-stage process here. And you know what? It's not even a case of Leach Alam. There's a case of Kedushin, a famous case where a man is Mekadesh a woman. He says the Kedushin Michal in 30 days. So in that case, the Eidim were there at the time that he gave her the Tabas. They heard the Tanai of Lach Alam. And then she becomes Mekudeshes without Eidus at the end of the 30 days automatically. So the Maisa Kedusha took place at the beginning of the month, and the Chalos Kedusha is withheld until the end of the month. That I understand. But in this case, before he started working on the ring, she says to him, let's have Kedusha. And he agrees. So he says, I'm going to be Mekadesh you. But he didn't give her anything yet. Right, he's only giving her the chov. That chov emerges b'siyum ha-pa'ula, according to the Rashba. That's way down the line.
Why is it problematic?
Because it's not a kedusha l'ach lamed, right? Kedusha l'ach lamed means here, I'm giving this to you, and I'm saying it'll be chal after lamed. So at this moment, the beginning of the month, you got something. What is he giving her at the beginning of the month? Zippo, zero. He's only giving us something at the end of the month when he finishes the pu'ula, and now he's got something which engenders a chov, and he says, you don't have to pay me for it. Again, Rambosa, I just want to explain one point here. Both the Rashba and the Ritva are all in agreement that in order to create a mechilas chov, in this case of schirus, which would engender kedusha, which would be valid as kedusha, you need simultaneity. You need that at the moment of the chov, that the chov comes into being, at that moment he's being makadisha with that chov. That somehow magically circumvents and solves the problem of makadish b'milta. Okay. The question is, what is that critical moment? And that moment, which whatever it is, it's either A or B, it's the moment of the hishavus hachov, meaning when she becomes obligated to pay him, whatever that moment is, that's got to be identified as the moment of kedushin. Because if the moment of kedushin is later on, it's mekadesh b'milta. So we have machlokas between the Rashba and the Ritva. What is the moment of his havus hachov? And therefore, willy-nilly, when is the moment of chalos kedusha? According to the Rashba, we go back in time to the moment of siyum ha'pa'ula. At that moment, yesh l'schius t'chila l'schius el basov, the word basov means siyum ha'pa'ula. When the object is complete, at that moment the chov is engendered and she has to own the chov. That's the moment he's mekadesh with that chov as it emerges. Take it from me out. The lasachas. According to the Ritva, no. We're going to have to wait until the mesiras hatachshit. That's when the chov emerges. That's when we apply the principle of yeshna of ein l'schiras el basov. And that's when she's mekudesh. So the nafkamina between the Rashba and the Ritva is going to be in a case where she had a relationship between the Siyum HaPu'ula and the Mesiras HaTachshit. Alternatively, can she renege or can he back out of this Kedushin? Right, up until the Chalos Kedushin, you can have what's called Chazora. According to the Rashba, there's no Chazora after the Siyum HaPu'ula because then already the Kedushin is Chal. According to the Ritva, we postpone and delay the Chalos Kedushin until the Mesiras HaTabaz. And therefore, either one of them, presumably, can be chozer. They can decide, I'm out. Because at the moment of chalos kedushin, that's when you need ratzon, that's when you need hisratzos. All these are nafkaminas. But I just want to emphasize that that's the main point here, that all the Rishonim Pe'echot, unanimously, are only successful, are only able to reach their goal of validating this kedushin and sideswiping the problem of mekadesh b'milta by assuming that the kedushin is going to be chal immediately, simultaneously with the chov. If the kedushin is chal with the chov, and that means he's removing that chov, by removing that chov with its inception, together with its inception, that's called a nesinas kesef. When does he remove that chov? Well, that depends when the chov emerges. But the kedushin is chal through the mechanics of removing that chov. But that removal of chov has to be simultaneous with the creation of the chov. When is that critical moment that we isolate as the creation of the chov? That's a machlok stream, the Rashba and the Ritva. The Rashba holds the critical moment of his havas hachov is gmar siyum ha'pu'ula. The Ritva delays it until the moment of what? Of Messiah. That's what I have so far.
Of course, we didn't not necessarily cholek, but it's like two different ways of doing this. But what's the Rashba saying? It's like a t'nai. It means she isn't in the Kaddish months beforehand. The moment you finish this ring, I'm the Kaddish to you.
Right. Can I cut you off in the middle here? So I just want to point out, which you know, that t'nai, in the literal sense, meaning if you want to use t'nai sort of loosely or figuratively, that's fine as you go along with your presentation, but I just want to stop you from the get-go. If you mean t'nai in the technical sense, this can't be a t'nai. I'll tell you why. T'nai is a t'nai in the Maisa Kedusha, meaning when he gives us something, he can make a t'nai. If he hasn't given her anything, that's not a t'nai. It could be an agreement, and maybe it will turn into a t'nai later on, but a t'nai always has to be made b'shas ma'isa kedushin.
It's like in 30 days of when...
Right, but again, you could only create that t'nai in 30 days, l'achalamet, at the moment of the Mesiras HaTamas, at the moment of the ma'isa kedushin. Meaning, I can't make a t'nai with you. Let's say I'm going to sell you something in a month from now. Let's make a t'nai. Yeah, we can discuss that, and it's all good, and it's divrei amana, you know, we trust each other, and that's all fine and dandy. And, you know, you trust me and I trust you, that's wonderful. But that's not a chal l'shem t'nai. If I haven't given you anything, you know, if this is mine and I give it to you, I can make it t'nai. It's yours on the condition that you know, you're going to talk to the governor on my behalf. I'll give it, this is yours, but it'll only be yours after 30 days. I can make that tonight. But here, there's no Mesira, there's no Maisa Nesinas Kesev until the point in which there's a Chov to talk about, and he's going to give it that Chov. So you go on in your presentation, but just be aware that it's not really, really T'nai. I'm giving you the green light if you want to use the word T'nai as a shame on Mushal, you know, a borrowed term, but technically that's not called a T'nai. I hope I didn't say anything that wasn't politically correct here, you know. So again, the bottom line is there's a fundamental machlokas here between the Rashba and the Ritva, but the machlokas is where? Is it in Hilchas Kiddushin or in Hilchas Chirus? It's in Hilchas Chirus. It has nothing to do with Hilchas Kiddushin. There's a spin-off in Kiddushin, a major spin-off. But the Machlokas itself is rooted in how do you understand Ye Ein L'Schirus El V'Sof? Do I understand it as A, Ein L'Schirus El V'Sof means Sof Pa'ula, which is the way we wanted to interpret it intuitively before we saw the Ritva? Or do I interpret it Ein L'Schirus El V'Sof means when he gives her the final product, that transfer of the final product from his hand, the Uman's hand, to the hand of the Baal Bayis, that's what clinches the Chov. That's what generates the Tashlum. And I'm thinking out loud now, Rabosai, the Machlokas between the Rashba and the Ritva could be relevant even in Dine Mominos. Because what would happen if in between time T1, the Siyum HaPu'ula, and time T2, the Mesiras HaTavas, the Tavas got lost? Who would suffer that loss? Okay, so you have to know the laws of Shmirah and Shia and this and that. We're going to have a discussion about that a little bit later. But in pure theory, what's going to happen is that according to the Rashba, she's going to take that loss. She's going to take that loss. If let's say the Tachshit went up in smoke, right? Because already at the point, you know what? I just thought of it. That's not really a good nafkamin. Just one second. No. I backtrack. Let me just... See, that would be if you hold the Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli. Yeah, then the Tachshit itself. But if the Machlokas were the... Just one second. You know what? No, that's not... Oh, I had another possibility, but that's not good either. Okay, we leave it out. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to clarify this matter. Let's take it away from whether she's... In generally speaking, if I were to make you a loan and cancel it at the simultaneously, what would I have done?
You're giving me something new. In other words, watch this, Alan.
Yeah.
Let's say you're holding a $100 bill in your hand.
Yeah.
And you say, Berzon, I'm giving you this $100 bill and I expect you to return it. That's called what? Halva. Now, when I say return it, I don't mean that same dollar bill, right? Because milva lo tzon, and that's why you can't be mekadesh an ishu with a milva.
Right.
But let's say, Alan, instead of saying to me, here's $100, Berzon, and you pay me back, you say to me, here's $100 as a loan, but you know what? You don't have to pay me back. You're mochel the chov immediately with the giving of the halva. It sounds like a crazy thing to do, right? Because so why is it halva to begin with? Says the Ritva, that's called Kiddushin. A man says to a woman, here's $100, but you know what? You don't have to pay me back. In such a case, he's giving us something she didn't have. Says the Ritva, let's take it one step further. If at the very moment that chov comes into being, he's mochel the chov, that means he's basically giving her that funds and saying, you don't have to pay me anything, just give me kiddushin.
Is that the same thing as saying...
It's wow.
Is that the same thing as saying, if I make a neder, that if I give you a loan, it'll be mochel?
If I give you a loan, it'll be mochel?
Right.
It's not a loan, is it?
Correct. So again... You know, in that case, that's called nesina. That's called hakna. That's like giving something new. Why? Because you take out of your pocket $100.
Right.
Once you take out that money and you give it to me, then we have two choices here. We're at a crossroads. Either I owe you that money back, and then if you mochel me, well, that's mechilas milfa. That's called, you know, removing some obstruction here. You know, instead of my having to write a check and take out money from my bank, You exempt me, you exonerate me from that obligation. Or what you can do is you can say, here's $100 and keep it. Is that strange? What did he ask Arjunal to keep it? That's a matana, is it not? That's not about milva. So the Ritva says that there's one scenario, and I think the Rashba is on board with this too, in which you can have a milva that's converted into an asina. It's as if I gave you a gift. And that's a case where you're owing me a chov automatically turns into a gift. How does your owning a chov turn into a gift? If I am mochel you with the chov itself, with the emergence of the chov. Again, Rabosa, I can't say anything more than that. You know, you can hack me from now till Mashiach Zeit, and then I can't help you with that. At this point, the ball is in your court.
See, I was just wondering if the only reason it works by an isha is because there is a mamashis that is involved in it, i.e. the ring. So she can see the ring as a...
But Alan, you know what? Yeah, you're really getting into a minefield here, because now you're totally identifying with the Ritva at the expense of the Rashba. Because the Rashba is saying she hasn't gotten the ring yet, and she's Mekudesh. She's a full-fledged Eishas the very moment he finishes the pool. And the only way of seeing that is if you define the Mechila and the Chov itself as the Kesef Kedusha. The Chov itself, which she owes at the moment he finishes the Pula, that is transformed and elevated, you know, to what we call in Hebrew a Shidrug, you know, to the level of Kesef Kedusha.
But only if he's Mochel it at the time that he actually finishes, if you do that second.
Well, no, then, Michael, we go back to what Zev said before, you know, that arrangement they already made beforehand, meaning at the beginning when she gave him...
You said he couldn't.
No, I'm saying as an arrangement, not as a Tanakh, but I'm saying they already arranged that the Kedushin should be Chal with the Mechila Sachov, if that Mechila will take place simultaneous with the Chov. No action has to be done at this point. That's why I told you the logistics is very difficult. I don't know where the Eidim... You know, or the Adam there in his shop, you know, when he gives the... I don't know. Don't ask me that question because I can't answer. There are a lot of questions here that are unanswered, but, you know, I'm doing the best I can with the tools I have. Basically, what's happening is, since they already made an agreement up front that he is going to be Mocha Lechov at the very moment that he emerges, and that qualifies and constitutes Kesef Kedushin, then there's no need for him to give her the Takshin according to the Rashba, because the Rashba holds that Kesef was given to her at the very moment when he was Mocha Lechov, because the Chov itself is the Kesef
Kedushin. Can they do something Ein Barba Olam? Can they make a Tanai on something that hasn't yet?
Again, it's not a Tanai. It's just an understanding that the... What can I... I can be Mocha... Oh, you're asking a different question. Can I be... Okay. That's a technical question. In other words... How does the Mechila work when a month ago, before the Chov emerged, he already told her, I'm going to be Mochel the Chov? That's not a problem, because Mechila is a little bit different. Mechila is an ongoing thing. In other words, if I say to you now, unless I change my mind, again, he always has the right to change his mind until the object and the Chov emerges, but if he doesn't change his mind, then there's a ratzon for Mechila that's, so to speak, an ongoing ratzon.
So he doesn't have, so when he finishes, you're saying he doesn't do anything?
I don't think so, not according to the Rashba. According to the Ritva, he has to do something, but he's only doing something b'toras chirutz, meaning he's only giving her the takshin in order to engender that chov. And that's a dini momentis halacha. The conversion, the transformation of that chov into kesef kedushin, that was already set in stone when he promised her a mechila from the get-go. Again, the mechila itself will only be chal, obviously, with the emergence of the chov. It can't be prior to the emergence of the chov. It can't be mochel a chov that doesn't exist. That's what you were saying before about Dom Shalom Aliola. But simultaneous with the emergence of the chov is a mechila. The radical conclusion that we have to derive from this, or both sides, is that Makadish b'milva mekudeshes. What do I mean? I'm joking with you. We assume that Makadish b'milva mekudeshes means that a milva could never be Kesef Kedusha. That's not true. That's a mistake. When can a milva not serve as Kesef Kedusha? When the Mechila comes later. Post the milva. So the milva and the chov emerge. Now comes the Mechila. The Mechila is not Kesef Kedusha. Mechila only is Mavriach Ari. It's only removing a stumbling block, which would force her, you know, it's like cutting the strings that force her to pay up. But it doesn't mean that the Chov itself is not Mama. The Chov itself is Mama. You know, I'm thinking out loud, Rabbi Osai, as we speak. Can I transfer ownership over a Chov?
Yes.
So I'm going to tell you no, right? What do I mean I'm going to tell you no? The answer is yes, but I'm going to tell you no, absolutely not. A chov is an abstract thing. It's not tangible. How can I transfer over ownership to it? And yet the Gemara says I can transfer you a chov. How do I transfer the chov? Technically, logistically, I take the shtar and I give you the shtar. That's called in the Lashon HaShas, osios niknos b'mesira. But again, the mesiras hashtar is not a kinyan on the shtar, which is worth lots of alfitz l'chuso, two grush. The kinyan is chal on the chov. So you see that chov is mammon. Chov is a chefzi shal mammon. Nuva meila, makadish b'milvah should be makudeshes. Why can't I be makadishi with the chov? I'm giving you a chov now. The answer is no, I'm not giving you a chov. I'm being mochel a chov. Being mochel a chov is not the same as giving a chov. But if I would give a woman a chov and create that and transform that chov into a chefzi shal mammon, how do I do that? By creating a mechila simultaneous with the emergence of the chov. That's the magic of this sugya. That's called yesh l'stiris, aim l'stiris, el l'mislam. Alright, let's go on, Rabbos, because that's right now the best I can do. The Rashba has another kasha.
All of this was the Rabbi Meir.
This is according to Rabbi Meir, who holds that she's mekudeshes, because he holds yesh l'stiris, aim l'stiris, el l'mislam. The chachom on the old hand, yesh l'stiris, mitchil v'atzof. So what came first? The chov or the mechilas chachom? The chov. Is the chov came first. That's called mekadesh b'mil. Now the Rashba has another kasha over here. This is a brilliant kasha, which I am getting very excited about. This you'll see in footnote number Lamed Aleph. And in order to appreciate his kasha, we have to know his sugya in Kiddushin. The Gemara says that even though mekadesh b'mil the ain't a mekudeshes, but mekadesh b'mashkon mekudeshes, which means that if, let's say, she owes me a chov, and she gave me security, right? Security of mashkon for that chov. And she says to me, look, if I don't pay up the chov, this is yours. That's called a mashkon. Now, I take this mashkon, and I give it to her, and I say, I read mekudeshes libe mashkon zeh, is mekudeshes. That's a way in which the mechilas achov is now focused on an object, if you follow what I mean. He's not just being mochel a chov, he's giving on the mashkon. The mashkon represents the chov, and he's giving all that chov on a silver platter by returning the mashkon. And she's mekudeshes. Oh, frek the Rashba. This object, even if I hold uman lo kona b'shvach kli, nevertheless it's a mashkon. Why? Because the whole idea of the uman holding on to the object until such time as he gets paid for his wages, the Gemara establishes is a mashkon. What security do we grant the uman to calm him down that the balabais won't fly the coop? You remember we discussed this in the past. And the Gemara says halachically he can take this object and run with it until he gets paid. Again, he can't do that before he approaches the balabais for payment. But if the balabais refuses to pay him, like the case of a lover who refuses to pay, again, I'm not judging him, maybe he has no money, but he refuses to pay, is the malva walks away with it. He's the proud owner of the mashkon. Again, he better be smart and guarantee that the mashkon is worth the same value as the chol. That's a sugyan bab mitzia in Perek HaZov, which I'm sure Michael is very much aware of, because I know he's learning Perek HaZov now. And the Gemara wants to know what happens if the mashkon is worth less than the chol. Does he have a kinyan on the whole chov or only connected to the mashkon? But be that as it may, if he's a smart guy, Mr. Malva, he's going to lend money with and receive a mashkon that's worth equivalent to the chov. If it's worth more than the chov, then we have a problem with what's called modu viksa tiny yishama, because the malva is going to say, well, the mashkon was worth the same as the chov, and the lover is going to say, no, the mashkon that got lost is worth more than the chov, so he's modu viksa tiny yishama. But be that as it may, makadish b'mashkin mekudeshes. So look at the Rashba, which is in footnote number Lamed Aleph. Hiksha Rashba, remavur b'sech the kedushin adam shilva mosli isha v'nasna lo mashkon tmurasam lach mikam makadisha v'mechilas halvazu umeshiv ha-mashkon liyada. Right, the mashkon itself represents the mechilas hachov, and he's saying, I'm giving you back the chov. The chov is now concretized or it's reflected in the mashkon, right? The mashkon is the chov now, and he gives her the mashkon, and the chov is completely wiped off. So even though I hold Makash Mila ain't a Makudeshes, nevertheless here she is Makudeshes in Cain.
But that's not his choice.
Well, wait, let's just finish the Kasha before you want to answer the Kasha. I just want to get the Kasha down. In Cain, Frek the Rashba, Afkan, in Yeshla Dun, Yeshla. One second, Yeshla Dun. Oh, okay. Yeshla Dun, we should define Ha'uman, in the case where the Uman is giving out the Tachshid, Kimakadshab and Mechilas Halva. Why? To be Kamakama Rezu Halva, Sheshla Mashka. Shere call Uman Tofes Es Hamalacha. Sha'asa, meaning the object that he worked upon, but Torah's mashkon al tashlum schara. So now when he's mochel a chov, by giving her back the mashkon, that mashkon itself should be the chov, and therefore qualify as kesef kedushin. A brilliant question of the Rashi, but you understand the implication of this kash. It just completely undermines the whole sugya. Why? Because the Gemara establishes that the Uman, with regard to that malach that he did, is holding on to a mashkin, and the Gemara says you can be Makadish a woman by giving her a mashkin. So when he gives her the object and he says, I don't want to be paid, that's a case of Makadish bin Milver. I'm sorry, Makadish bin Mashkin. Now let's just anticipate the answer of the Rashba. Again, I'm not being Makadish Kedushim because I'm hoping that what I'm about to tell you is going to be in the Rashba. Meaning, I've read the Rashba already, so it's not like I'm not trying to fool you. But I'm not sure that what I'm going to say is in the Rashba, but let's hope it is, because I really think this is the answer.
Can you explain the question again?
Again, the question is the following, that this tachshit in the hands of the Uman is basically a mashkon, and that's established mefurish by the sugya on the chov. She owes him dmei skirus. He's holding on to the mashkon, to the tachshit as a mashkon. Now, when he gives her the tachshit, he's saying, "You know what? I'm being mochel the chov. Here's your chov back, because the mashkon represents the chov. So why is she not mekudeshes?" I think the answer is the following: that it's true that he can hold on to the tachshit until such time as she pays, or anybody who hired him, you know, commissions and pays the chov. But that's not your classical mashkin about which the Gemara says Makadish b'mashkin is mekudeshes. Makadish b'mashkin means when there's an old chov and there's a mashkin on the old chov, and now he gives her the mashkin. That could be a valid kedusha. But here, there's no old chov. She doesn't owe him any chov. It's only when he completes the deal, when he completes the work, then the chov emerges. So that's not a mashkin which he can give her as kedusha. Let's see if he gives that answer. It tirates. In other words, there was a chov, and now the lova gives a mashkon over to the malve. Is hadinu shekone mashkin ze? In other words, the mashkin is his kinyan over the chov, and then he can give it back to her and be makadish. It's true he could withhold the tachshit until such time as she forks over the money, but that's not a kabbalas mashkon. He didn't accept or receive these items or this item of a tachshit as a mashkon, and therefore he's never kone this as a mashkon to say, well, this represents the chov. You notice on both sides, there are two categories here. There's a full-fledged category of a mashkon, which means that the mashkon represents the chov. That's when I give you, if I'm the lova, I give you the malva, this object as representative of the chov, and it's yours, and you can keep it, and until I pay you the chov, and then, only then do I have rights to get it back. But then there's something else. There's something else in which I hold security here. In other words, I'm going to lock you out of your office until you pay my chov. Here also, I'm going to lock you out of this tachshit until you pay up the chov. That's what the Gemara means. That the Uman is within his legal rights and he's not a gazlan if he refuses to return the tachshit until such time as he gets paid. But that doesn't give the tachshit the status of a mashkin, such that now he's kone the tachshit. He doesn't have a kinyan on the tachshit. Okay, Rabbo, so what time is it? Let's see what we can accomplish in just the next few minutes. I'm not going to apologize for going slowly because this is one of the most difficult sugyas that we've had. Ibai Sev the Gemara says, the Kuli Alma Yeshna Lestus Mitchil Vat Sof. In truth, this is certainly a case of Makadish Ben Milva, because immediately with the Pu'ula, the Chov emerges from the beginning of the Pu'ula. But v'ahocha v'makadish b'milva k'michli r'meir sovar makadish b'milva v'kudeshes. V'rabbanan sovar makadish b'milva eina v'kudeshes. Now I'm going to take a stab at this. What does it mean? How does Rebbeinu make any sense that makadish b'milva v'kudeshes, he's not giving her anything new? And I think perhaps that what you can say is that Rabbi Meir has a twist here. He has a different understanding of the mechanics of what it means when a man says to a woman, "Hare at mekudeshes li b'mechilas milva." What does that mean? We understand that he's being mekadesh through the mechila, but maybe Rabbi Meir holds that the money itself is the kesef kedusha, meaning Rabbi Meir agrees that you can't be Makadish Anisha with Mechilas Milva, because Mechilas Milva is not giving us something that she doesn't have. But the way Rabbi Meir understands Makadish Milva is that the most that I gave you, they themselves should serve as Kesef Kedushin. You'll ask me the cash, she's already spent those most. If she's already spent those most, then I'm back to square one. But let's say she hasn't yet spent those most. So what he can do, according to Rav Meir, is sort of retroactively convert those mos into kesef kedushin. Originally, I gave them to you as alva. You're still holding on to that kesef. Now let's use that kesef as kesef kedushin. The Chachamim disagree for two reasons. First of all, kesef kedushin you have to give. He's not giving her anything. She already has it. And secondly, milva lo tzadin. She makes an absolute kinyan on the mos from the very moment she receives it as alva. No, says Rav Meir. First of all, I disagree with you. I don't think he has to give her anything. Even if she's already holding it, right? Let's say, for example, Mekadesh b'pikadon. I give a woman an object and I say, I'm depositing it in your surveillance, but it's mine. Then he can be Mekadesh with that pikadon. He doesn't have to take it back and give it to her again. Secondly, if you'll ask, well, isn't it true that somebody's desperately trying to get a hold of the image, I think.
I see.
Even if it's true that that the milva is lo tzadin, that she made a kinyan on the milva, Rabbi Meir holds that that kinyan is postponed until such time as she actually spends the mos. As long as she's still holding out to the mos, she hasn't made a kinyan on it.
Why does she have to hold on to the mos? I mean, why can't she? He say what he's doing is he pays off her present halva to himself and creates a new halva. And with the money that he paid off the old one, that's the mos that he uses for the kedushin.
Right, but when you say he gave a new mos, where are these new mos? I don't see them, you know.
No, but you don't have to see them.
No?
Why do you have to see them? You know that she has them.
But those mos, again, who owns those mos? She does or he does? That's what I'm trying to figure out. If
she owns the mos.
Ah, so that's where I get right there. I get a problem because what do you mean he owns the mos? The halacha is milva lo tzadin, which means that the very moment you receive the mos, the lover receives the mos. He's the proud owner of those mos.
No, that's not what I mean. That's the mos that I'm talking about. No, but she owes him money. Owes him from before. Even it doesn't matter.
Correct.
The old mos. He takes his own money. Takes his own money. Pays off that halva. And creates a new halva for the money that he just.
But again, paid. Is there money that's going into our account? That's I don't understand. In your scenario, is he actually digging into his pocket and taking out mos?
There's no clink. You can't hear the coin.
So I'm saying, if he's not actually giving up mos, then I don't understand how the kedushin can be chal. Anyway, we're now on the top of Tzadites Amid Beis. Michael, you have to go. But we have 2-3 more minutes. Rava Amar de Kuli Alma Yeshno Lischiris Mitchil Vatzol. So that's a problem because we're Makadish B'Milva. Not only that, the Kuli Alma Makadish B'Milva ain't a Kudesh. It's because again, Milva Lotzah Nitna, and the money belongs to her. Not like Rebbeir says, the money belongs to her. Not like Rebbeir would say, no, the money belongs to him until she spends the money. No, even before she spends the money, the money belongs to her. Oh. And the Kuli Alma ain't Uber Kovar Shvach Kli. Oh, now we're in deep trouble. I mean, he's closed every single door over here. Elohacha Mayaskinon says, Rova, it's a whole new pshat. What did he give back? Not just the takshit, but he added something to the takshit. Kigon Shahosifla Nofach Mishalo. He took out something from his pocket and he added it to the ring. You know, the ring has now not one onyx stone, but two onyx stones. And he's Makadisha with this ring. But who owns the ring? Well, she owns the ring, except for that extra onyx that he added. And why should there be any issue about this kedushin? Oh. So Rabbi Meir Savar b'milve upruta daita pruta. Rabbanan Savar b'milve pruta daita amilve. What happens if a man gives two things to a woman? One of them is not valid. It cannot be used as kedushin. What can't be used as kedushin? The milva. So he wants to mekadesh with the mechilas milva of the schirus, and then he adds a pruta. He adds another object. So she got two things. But one of those two things completely torpedoes, undermines the kedushin. And that's the Rabbanan Shita, is daita milva. Part of this kedushin is the milva itself. And Rabbi Meir says, no, the kedushin is chal on the pruta. And forget about the milva. She's not accepting the milva's kesef kedushin. Meaning, the Rabbanan see one heftza of kedushin here. What's the heftza kedushin, the kesef that he's giving her? He's giving her milva plus the nofach mishalo. Correct? That's a problem, because included in this maisa kedushin is a psul, is a hafkad, is something that undermines the kedushin. It's like a case, for example, in challah. If let's say you have joint ownership on challah, on the dough, with a Jew and a non-Jew, so the Gemara says you're potter. The Jew owns the challah, no less than the guy. The answer is the bailus of the guy torpedoes the chiyuv of harisal sechem, right? Of challah. Here too, the fact that he's giving her a milva and she's receiving that milva as kesef kedushin, even though she's also receiving something else. It's like if you gave a woman two prutas, one is black and one is white, and the black one is pasul and the white one is kosher, then according to the Rabbanan, the black one torpedoes the white one. There's a foreign element here that completely undermines the kedushin and blows it out of the water. Says Rav Meir, no, why do you have to say such a thing? Why not just redefine the heft of kedushin and say the heft is not the milve plus the pruta, but it's only the pruta. Okay, we'll have to stop here. But what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to quote another brisa that has this machlokus about pruta v'milve, whether or not daita pruta milve and therefore ainu mekudesh, or daita only on the pruta. Okay, then Rabosai, we'll stop. We'll
can't
stop.
Can't we say that the milve just doesn't do anything? It's not that it's possible.
Correct. Why did the Chachamim assume that milva is a black negative? Yeah, why not see it as something neutral? It doesn't have the power, but it's not afka. Why is it afka?
No, because she's concerned. Because she doesn't want to be a kedush for a pruta.
Maybe it's halacha das.
Yeah, because
that's not the way the Rashba says. Take a look in the Rashba.
Yeah.
The Rashba says daita. Daita bidavar. Okay, maybe you can fit it into the Rash, but maybe he means it's a pisar das.
Because she's afraid he's not going to be able to do that.